Otaku no Podcast, episode 34 for Monday, May 7th, 2012. The Japan Travel Extravaganza, part 2. This episode is brought to you by GoToMeeting, now with HD Faces. Okay, we are back with part 2 of the Japan Travel Extravaganza. Right off the bat, I've got some exciting news for you. In part 1 of the Japan Travel Extravaganza, we spoke to Pop Japan Travel about the various tour packages that they offer. Unfortunately, after the March 11th Tohoku earthquake and tsunami disaster of last year, they decided to suspend tour operations for an indefinite period. Well, after reading some tantalizing signs on their message boards, I thought that it seemed to me that they would be returning pretty soon. Well, only about 1 week after I published that episode, they go and announce their triumphant return. So, are we prophetic or what? Anyhow, Pop Japan Travel is back, and for their return, they've pulled up all the stops. They've announced the mother of all tour packages, the amazing All Japan Alpha and Omega Adventure Tour. This tour is going to run from August 29th through September 7th, and if you're having trouble making up your mind, you know, on what Pop Japan Travel package you might want to go for, well, good news, the amazing All Japan Alpha and Omega Adventure Tour is going to appeal to everyone because they threw a little bit of all of their tour packages into this one ginormous mother of all tour packages. I mean, this tour spans many facets of otaku culture, everything from anime and manga to Japanese fashion, theater, food, and traditional culture. Some of the highlights include visits to anime and manga studios where you can meet and interact with real live manga and anime artists, a visit to an Independence Comics exhibition, unfortunately not Comiket, but it still sounds pretty fun, visits to top Japanese fashion outlets including Shibuya 109 and La Forêt, a tour of Akihabara, famed electronics district, and Otaku Mecca, an opportunity to see the famous all-female Takarazuka Review theater troupe, a tour of Kyoto, center of Japanese traditional culture, dining experiences of all shapes and sizes, and oh, so much more. Anyways, the tour is going to run from August 29th through September 7th. Unfortunately, pricing details have not yet been announced. You definitely want to keep an eye on the Pop Japan Travel website as information comes out. And if you're interested in the tour, definitely shoot them an email or ping them on Twitter or Facebook. A couple of anime convention announcements. AnimeCon has, in the past week, come out with a flurry of new guest of honor announcements. Igaguri Chiba, vocalist for the musical group Sendai Komatsu, will be one of their musical guests of honor. This is a kind of an interesting group. Their shtick is that they are a group of workers from a mysterious freight company who decide to start performing together for a hobby. But in order to not be recognized by their coworkers and their bosses, they disguise themselves by wearing red coveralls and wearing heavy makeup. Sendai Komatsu announced their hiatus in November of 2009. Because of the recession, their freight company went out of business, and Chiba decided to launch a solo career in an effort to raise enough capital to revive the freight company. He released his first single, Gira Gira Boys, in October 2010, and he's been on tour twice since then, and he's currently preparing for his third tour, which is set to begin June 29th. He'll be performing at the Fanimecon's Music Fest. They always have some great musical concerts. And he'll also be giving panels, holding autograph sessions, and he'll be merchandising as well. Fanimecon also announced that it'll be hosting the U.S. premiere of the film Replay Girls, which is kind of a fantasy action drama film directed by Yuki Saito. The basic plot is that we have Michi, a high school girl with a seemingly perfect life. One day, her life basically kind of falls apart when she reveals a big secret to her best friend, Haruna, who actually turns out to stab her in the back and betray her secret. She becomes a target of bullies at school, and her life kind of spirals downhill. And blinded by her agony and hurt, she stumbles onto a suicide chat room where she exchanges stories with others in similar situations. And after spending some time on the site, she's asked, "Would you like to replay?" Michi impulsively presses yes, which catapults her on a quest to her own death in the suicide game Replay Girls. There will also be a Q&A with the director. Giles Poitras and Rick Myers, you'll have to forgive me if I mispronounce that, will be returning to Fanime as well. Giles Poitras, again, apologies for the lousy pronunciation. He's an author and librarian. He's got a large body of work, including the author of many popular books on anime, such as The Anime Companion, Anime Essentials, and The Anime Companion 2. He's also contributed many times to otaku-centric magazines, including New Type USA and Otaku USA. And Rick Myers is a novelist and comic creator. He's a comic artist. He's done comics for Atlas, Tops, DC, and Image, has done sci-fi, horror, and fantasy mystery novels for Warner's, Dell, and Dungeons & Dragons. He's also written some nonfiction books about science fiction movies, fantasy films, and TV detectives. Illustrator Mamoru Yokota and Gainax founder Hiroyuki Imaka are also returning to FanimeCon. Mamoru Yokota is a multifaceted individual. He's been a character designer, producer, and animation director. He's worked on many popular titles such as Death Note, The Air Movie, Canon, Magical Canon, and Kitty Grade. And Hiroyuki Imaka has recently been busy as the executive producer and project planner of EA's Rock, which is Gainax's first live-action Sentai comedy drama. And in the past, he's also done a lot of work on many aspects of anime production within Gainax. He was the executive producer on Foolie and the Neon Genesis Evangelion movie Death and Rebirth. He's also worked on screenplays for Mobile Suit Gundam 0080 and Royal Space Force Wings of Honiamis. In addition to directing a number of shows, including Magical Shopping Arcade, Abinabashi, and Mahoromatic. And finally, just today, they announced that manga artist Kiya Asamiya will be a guest of honor. He's made his manga debut with the series Shinseki Vagrants in 1986, and then went on to work on Silent Mobius and Martian successor Nadesco, both of which were marketed into numerous media types. During the earlier parts of his career, he has used his real name, Michitaka Kikuchi, while he worked on anime titles such as Sonic Soldier Borgman and Project Eiko. He has a large body of works in both American comics and Japanese manga, including Corrector Yui, Mobius Klein, Junk Record of Last Hero, and the manga adaptation of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Asamiya's contribution to American comics allowed him to work on some of his favorite franchises, including Batman, Hellboy, and Uncanny X-Men. He's continuing the series Kanojo no Carrera and Himegami Gadget on Flex Comics, as well as the monster design for the TV series Kamen Rider Forze. FanimeCon has also announced that they'll be putting on a blood drive with the Stanford Blood Center. I urge you to really consider giving blood, because, you know, when you look at things like the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami in Japan and other natural disasters, flooding, fires, all that sort of thing, you know, one of the things that is critical, is absolutely critical, to have a good supply of blood for emergencies, for transfusions, that sort of thing. It's not scary. It's not difficult to do at all. The only requirements are that you be at least 17 years old, weigh at least 110 pounds, be in good health, free of cold flu symptoms, and make sure you eat and drink plenty both before and after the blood donation. You also have to bring your ID. Donating blood is really easy. First, you have to register, you know, fill out your name, medical history, that sort of thing. And then they sit you down and donate the blood, which is not hard at all. I mean, I don't like needles, but it went very quickly. I barely felt it. And once you're done, you get to sit down and rest with refreshments. And once they process your blood, you'll get your information in the mail. You'll get to know your blood type as well as your Rh type. So you can finally learn how those Japanese horoscopes affect you. Donating blood is absolutely positively important. And kudos to FanimeCon for organizing this. I know a lot of conventions are doing this. I think San Diego Comic-Con has done this for years. I've seen blood drives at Anime Expo before. I just think, you know, it's something that's very important. And, you know, just, you know, people think that, you know, it's hard to do, it's scary, but really it isn't. Now, I have always thought that if you're doing a blood drive at an anime convention, you should have the blood drawing people cosplay as, I don't know, like Helsing characters or something. That would be kind of cool. Red Cross, get on that. I also talked about Anime Five Cities, the lovely, relatively new convention in the California Central Coast area. Unfortunately, at the time, they did not have their dates announced yet, but they have announced their dates for 2012. Anime Five Cities will be held on Saturday, August 11th. And once again, it'll be at the Ludwig Community Center in San Luis Obispo. Their 2012 website is up. Check them out in the show notes. Unfortunately, no guest announcements yet, but those will be coming soon, I suspect. AM2 has also announced another guest of honor, 6HIBI, and again, please forgive me if I mispronounce that. I have no way to know how to read that. Who's kind of a sort of a visual K fashion designer and vocalist. Also, Antonette, A-N-T-1-N-E-T-T, who is a band consisting of Masa Antonette on vocals, Ken Suzuki on guitar and keyboard, Rina Ito on guitar and keyboard, and Moko Lee on bass. They'll be the musical guests. Anime Expo also announced another guest of honor, Jamie Marchi, who's a prolific voice actress. She's done voices for Penny and Stocking with Garter Belt. She's also the lead writer for Penny and Stocking. She's also done voices from Witchblade, Hetalia, Soul Eater, Shin-chan, Yu Yu Hakusho, Fruits Basket, Black Cat, Rin, Blaz Rider, and Heaven's Lost Property, Sora no Otoshimono. This will be her debut at Anime Expo. She'll be hosting a meet and greet, as well as three signings and a focus panel. Danny Chu will also once again be returning to Anime Expo. I suspect he'll be doing some focus panels and various other things, and as well as emceeing some of the events. And finally, the SPJA, the sort of parent organization for Anime Expo, has made kind of an interesting surprise announcement. They've announced that they are adopting Anime Konji, which is an anime convention in San Diego. We've talked about that previously. Very little details so far. We'll have to keep an eye on that as the days come. But certainly an interesting turn of events for Anime Konji. All right, that's it for announcements. But before we go any further, it's time to thank our sponsor for this episode, GoToMeeting. Being able to attach a face to a name is absolutely important. It enhances our relationships and the way we do business. But unfortunately, meeting your clients and your colleagues in person can be impossible or really, really expensive. That is why I recommend GoToMeeting with HD Faces. It lets you meet face-to-face from anywhere in the world, even on the go from an iPad or other smartphone or tablet. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, all you need is a webcam, and with one click, you're collaborating in group HD video. You can see your attendees eye-to-eye while collaborating on documents in real time. You'll feel instantly connected, even if you're thousands of miles apart. Plus, GoToMeeting is really, really easy to use. If you're on an iPad or other smartphone or tablet, all you have to do is download the free GoToMeeting app from your device's app store, and you're in. Now, as many of you guys know, I do freelance computer work, computer consulting, and in one of my recent projects, I was helping put together a website for a client. At first, we were going back and forth with emails and telephone calls, trying to, you know, get the look and feel of this website nailed down, and it was torture. I mean, it's very hard to describe, you know, oh, I want, you know, I want the site to look like this. And then I sent him a mock-up. He's like, no, I meant this instead. And ugh, it was awful. So as an experiment, I decided to try a GoToMeeting meeting. First of all, my client said it was super easy. All he had to do, I invited him to the meeting. He got an email. All he had to do was just click the link in the email, and he was in. You know, we could instantly talk. You know, we could talk face-to-face. I could tell, you know, watching his expression, you know, if maybe what I was proposing may not be such a good idea or whether he really liked it or not. And, you know, I could actually work on the website live on my screen and share my screen with him so he could see exactly what I had in mind. And then he could say, no, actually, I meant this instead. I could even give him control of the screen if, for example, you know, we're trying to decide on the color of a button or whatever. I could just give him control and he could use the color picker to choose the exact shade of chartreuse that he wanted. It was really cool. You too can start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. Listeners can try it free for 30 days. All you have to do is just visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. That's PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T. Our thanks to GoToMeeting for sponsoring this episode. Well, we are back with part two of the Japan Travel Extravaganza. So last year, one of my friends announced to me that he was going to Japan for the first time. And, well, I was looking for a topic to do a podcast on. And so I thought, why don't we do an episode about traveling in Japan? So I got together with my friend and fellow co-host Danny Bearer, as well as the guys from TJX, the Japan Experience, and we talked travel. Unfortunately, this one turned out to be a really nasty editing job due to computer and Skype failures left and right. I had some sort of loop in my mixer setup which caused a nasty echo. It was awful. So awful, in fact, that I just gave up. I just, could not get through it. And so I put this episode on the shelf and kind of forgot about it. So, yeah, this is another sort of lost treasure. So finally, I decided, well, let's just go ahead and, power through it, see what I can do. As it turns out, I got it fairly listenable. Unfortunately, I could not correct all of the echoing problems, so you'll hear some parts where there's an echo. But I still think it's still listenable, and I think the information that we provide is very relevant and definitely should listen to it. We went on for over an hour and a half, so I'm going to have to split this up into two parts. In this first part, we talk about various places to go and things to see while in Japan. So, without further ado, let's get on to the episode. Okay, so here we are, Otaku no Podcast. We are here because a certain friend of mine has announced to me that he's going to Japan for the first time. And Danny, I believe you know him. You've seen him at the last two conventions you've been at, a certain staff member. Anyways, I thought this would be a great idea, a great time to get together and do the Japan travel special episode of Doom. So I'm here today with three people that we've had on before. First of all, we have Danny. Danny, how are you today?
I'm doing all right.
Excellent. And we have DJ City and DJ Gladiator from TJX, the Japan Experience. Gentlemen, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Genki.
Excellent. Excellent. So, yeah, travel in Japan. Now, obviously, we are not going to be able to hit everything because I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that there are over 9,000 things you can see and do in Japan, perhaps even in Tokyo alone.
Yeah, probably about right, really. But when you look at it this way, is that if you want to talk about everything, that's going to be like 45 hours, and I don't think you want that much content for one show.
Yeah, then I need to make like a 5,000 part episode or something.
Well, maybe you can make it up to 9,000. Who knows?
There you go. Yeah. So obviously, we can only hit some of the high points, some of the things that we particularly thought were cool or fun or whatnot. Your best bet is to, go online, Google and Wikipedia are your friend, look up things and, talk to other friends who've been to Japan. Anime forums are probably some great places to go as well.
Best forum I can say for if you want to travel to Japan, first thing would be is
JapanGuide.com. Would be the website.
Awesome.
Gives you all kinds of travel information about the various sites. Or the various places within Japan. It also gives you links to places to order your flights, to book hotels.
Domestic flights, off flights, hostels. They have some hostel information. Also, JNTO is another great site
if you want to book any places that you want to stay in Tokyo. Because this way, if you don't know the Japanese, they're going to at least know what you're asking, and they can help you get those places booked.
Good idea. So let's start within the sort of the greater Tokyo metro area. And I think one of the first things I think about when I think of Japan is, and probably a lot of people, other people as well, is Akihabara.
Yeah, Akihabara is a very interesting place. Now, some little bit of history that was just recently opened to my eyes. back, do you remember back in 2008 about the attack that happened in Akihabara?
Yes, there was a shooting rampage, which unfortunately resulted in several deaths and quite a few injuries, I believe.
It wasn't a shooting rampage, and precisely.
No, it was a stabbing rampage, I thought. I don't know, something like that.
Well, what he did is he drove his truck right through on a Sunday morning and just plowed through a whole bunch of people. And then he jumped out of his truck and started stabbing people, like left, right, center. Basically, the police came, they cornered him in a corner, and he dropped his knife. And there's a big, huge write-up, which I did see, which we do have the links for. In the whole aftermath of it all, they shut down Akihabara for Sundays. You could not do the normal...
Right.
Pedestrian walkway.
It used to be that on Sundays they would close the main thoroughfares in Akihabara, and then basically it would just turn into this one giant open air, you know, spectacle that you could all walk through, and there'd always be like tons of cosplayers out doing their thing, and you know, doing little dances to anime songs and that sort of thing. And yeah, after this attack, they shut that down for a long time. I believe just recently, maybe a couple weeks or a couple months ago, sometime late in 2010, I believe, they finally did start reopening it on Sundays. But I guess it's not quite the same as it was. People are maybe still a little leery or apprehensive or something. I don't know.
From what I read, it was just recently reopened at the beginning of January. At the beginning of February, they were going to reopen it. So far, there's been no problems, but they limited everybody from what they can do there. So if you have a bunch of people out there, you know, jumping around, dancing around, doing their thing, they can't do that anymore. They have to apply for a license, and the enforcement team is going to be there to stop it from happening if they try to do that again.
That is unfortunate. Still, I think it's something that'll be cool to see. And of course, there are plenty of other reasons to go to Akihabara. Starting with its history, it started in post World War II as sort of a place where people could get black market electronics, and because of that, it's kind of turned into this sort of electronics mecca. You could find all sorts of electronics vendors, everything from little tiny mom and pop stalls crammed in the back alleys, selling like LEDs, chips, all sorts of bits and bobs, assorted parts, all the way up to giant, huge mega stores selling, you know, the latest cameras and computers and stuff and everything in between. But it has also sort of reinvented itself in the recent years as sort of a mecca for otaku, in that there are tons of shops selling anime goods, manga, dating sim games, character goods, figurines, cosplay items, and there are also like tons of maid cafes and all sorts of related establishments all throughout the region.
Oh yes, and those maid cafes can be completely full service.
Hold on, hold on, Danny, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, our first experience with Akiba, we just spent an hour there during our 2004 trip, which definitely wasn't enough. On our second trip in 2007, we spent an afternoon there, and you know, we felt like we were about to drop dead from anime overload. It really is the intense otaku experience, kind of like it's some otaku's media room blown up to the size of an entire neighborhood.
Yes.
It's not hard to find the main anime stores. Just as you walk out of the train station, you run right into Gamers and others and the Tokyo Anime Center and places like that. But also, overall, in Japan, in metropolitan Japan, they tend to have stores that would have a street-level storefront in the United States stacked one on top of each other in high-rises, and certainly that's true in Akiba. So, but you will just with a rudimentary map, which you can probably get from a book like Insider's Guide to Neo Tokyo or online, you can find just about any anime good or item, and also other otaku interests such as role-playing games, board games, strategy games, models, etc. And that's interspersed with fun stuff like the maid cafes and all the electronic stores.
City Gladiator, did you have anything to add to that?
Well, it's the other maid cafes that we're going to get into.
Ah, yes.
There's your simple maid cafes, then there's your torture maid cafes.
Okay.
What I mean by the torture ones,
no.
There's a lot of weird ones there.
Yeah, there's full male maid cafes, full service maid cafes, if you know what I mean. You know, more than just the tea or coffee.
There's a transvestite cafe. There's the ones where the maids are evil to you and disrespectful to you. So, say if you play like a game of rock, paper, scissors.
And you lose. They put disgusting stuff in a drink. And if you lose to a certain amount of time, you have to drink this concoction. And it can just be the most nastiest concoction you've ever drank in your life. Like natto, raw egg, oh, what else was put in that?
Oh, I can't too many remember. Bad things.
Do not want.
And then they usually run after you as you're leaving, begging you to stay.
So, yes, there's a cafe for just about everything.
Oh, yeah.
And another interesting twist with Akiba is that because of the otaku culture that has exploded there, a lot of the denden shops have started to reappear in Ikebukuro. So you're sort of seeing the transplantation of the original Akiba history to another part of the town.
Interesting. Yeah, we were in Ikebukuro in 2004, there's that one big, was it Manimate? I forget the name of that. Manimate, yes.
There's an area of Ikebukuro, which we actually stayed there both of our times in Tokyo, which is called, nicknamed Otome Road, and it's fairly near the Sunshine Hotel. It's kind of near there's a street which has our favorite little cafe, Cafe Momongo, and then there's the K-Books and the multi-story Animate and a few other shops there. And it is noted for primarily appealing to female anime fans, much as Akihabara has the reputation of catering mostly to male anime fans. And so you'll find, for instance, in the Mandarake there, at least when I was there, a lot of doujinshi aimed towards, say, yaoi and male stuff, and most of the shops are crammed with high school age and college age and younger girls.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, City Gladiator, you had on your list here Harajuku.
Harajuku, yeah. Harajuku is the fashion district, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that is, they have fashion everywhere around there. You'll see some of the most weirdest fashions with girls painting their face black and walking around, which looks really freaky, to lots of shops that are high-end fashion. So if you want to buy something from Japan that's fashionable, you'll be paying a little bit.
Yeah, the interesting thing with Harajuku is you've got Omotesando, the main street, with the fashion stores. Right outside on the weekends of Harajuku Station, you've got another place where anime fans congregate and usually just hang out for no apparent reason after they've gotten all dressed up. The other interesting part of Harajuku is right beside the station is also Meiji Jingu. So you can go from a bustling, vibrant, urban setting, walk into the shrine, and it's sort of like you've left the city and gone out to the middle of nowhere.
There's also a very narrow street near the train station. I think is it Takeshi Dori, Takeshi Street, which is crammed with modern fashions, lots of new wave, not new wave, but the current version of it, lots of punkish stores, lots of lolly stuff, the kind of stuff you envision when you hear the name Harajuku, kind of Gwen Stefani type stuff.
Yeah, Yeah, and I think that's heading towards Shibuya as well, from Harajuku, that street.
And isn't Harajuku where I think it's either the world's busiest train station or like the world's busiest intersection or something like that? Or am I getting that mixed up with somewhere else?
Shibuya.
Ah, that's it. Yeah. Okay.
Shibuya is the world's busiest intersection. Shinjuku is the station.
Yes, and funny you should mention Shinjuku, because that is next on my list. Shinjuku is a home of the oldest traditional kabuki theater district. It is also home to, shall we say, entertainments of various types.
Yeah, it's the largest red light district in Japan.
You'll see, as you walk down the street, you'll be constantly accosted by barkers coming up to you saying, basically saying the Japanese equivalent of girls, girls, girls.
Not so quite. They kind of close it off to a lot of foreigners, so you won't get it so much. Roppongi, there's an area in Roppongi that's actually considered the Walk of Shame. And that's where the barters go after the so-called non-Japanese people. The Gaijin, and they try to get them into their bars.
But one other something else that you'll find in Shinjuku, if you just go off the main drag, is it's almost like being transported into another world. You're back in like really narrow, winding cobblestone streets, packed with all sorts of traditional eating and drinking establishments. Some of them not even as big as my bedroom closet, where you stretch your arms to either side of you and you're touching wall. But we had some of the best times there. Hitting up the various establishments, and that's something that I think is really cool that should be seen as well.
One thing about Shinjuku, if you've gotten to know it by watching the City Hunter series that was put out in the 80s,
yes,
or if you've read the City Hunter manga, which is all set in the Shinjuku, one of the main locations for the series is the Shinjuku train station, and there was a big sign throughout the series, and in fact, until recently on the train station, advertising the My City department store that was in the train station. Unfortunately, when I went to Shinjuku, I was looking all around the train station. It's a huge train station, looking for that My City sign. Eventually, I went into a Starbucks and I asked them about it. They said, no, that changed over to a different owner a few years ago, so no more My City sign.
That's too bad.
And aww, unfortunately, as they mentioned in the Angel Heart series, City Hunter used to get his assignments at the message board that was in the Shinjuku train station. But as they mentioned in the Angel Heart series, with the advent of cell phones, they got rid of the message board.
Yeah.
The inexorable march of modern technology.
Yeah.
Well.
Now,
I used to be a City Hunter fan, so...
Now, depending on when you go to Japan, you may or may not be able to do this, but if you do go during the right time, you are fortunate in that you'll be able to attend a sakura watching party. The sakura or cherry blossoms, they bloom traditionally like in the later part of March / the beginning of April, something like that. Probably varies, plus or minus a few days or a week by season or whatnot.
Yeah, well, with Tokyo, it's traditionally after April 1st, so first leading into the second week of April in the Kanto region. It's a little bit earlier if you're in Kansai or Chubu.
And this is the time when Japanese traditionally pack up their bentos and head out to the park, watch the sakura, and in the process of doing so, socialize and partake of the various food and drink stalls that are set up in the area.
Kind of like drink till you drop, really.
Something like that.
Just get into partaking about parts of the going to a sakura. Basically, you go early in the morning and you bring a tarp. You lay a tarp down near the tree that you want and you sit there all day looking at the sakura blossoms. Then after a while, you then drink till you get too drunk, and then you drink some more until you pass out, and basically then go home the next day. food, lots of food. You have yakitori. You have, if you're in certain areas, you have the Oh, octopus balls, not
takoyaki.
Takoyaki, which is yummy, very good. Tried that first time I was in Japan. Luckily for us, we were there during the Sakura season of 2005, so we got to partake in a lot of the things that were going on, including walking around. We were in Kyoto at the time, so we weren't in Tokyo at the time when that was happening, but Kyoto, they do a night showing where they light up all the sakura trees at night.
Ah, yes, you were talking about that.
So beautiful. Trying to remember the place now that we were on. Oh, boy. It's been so long since I've been back. Were you able to partake in any of the sakura season?
When we went was in January, so no.
And the times I went were in January and August, September, so no, we missed the sakura blossoms entirely.
Oh, so you suffered the hot weather.
We enjoyed the monsoon season of Japan, including one typhoon that blew through Tokyo.
Wow.
Talk about interesting aspects of it all.
Yeah. Blew the A off the enemy building.
Oh, why?
Yeah, typhoons are usually very dangerous in Japan. I think the lowest one I thought was a typhoon number 4 was the highest they've had so far in the last couple of years. So it's been kind of interesting how it's been lately. Now, sakura is great. The time that usually starts in Tokyo is usually about the first week to the second week of April is about the prime time viewing. I know also I see you guys, the link tells you exact dates when the cherry blossom will be blooming. They say near the end of March they should be blooming this year for 2011. And they're updated about once a week to once a month on the website also that I sent you.
All right. And those sites will be put up. I'll put those up in the show notes.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. You'd mentioned in your list here Odaiba.
Oh, yes, Odaiba. Odaiba is a great place because Odaiba, when we went there, the main reason to go was for this onsen. And if you've never been to an onsen, it's something everybody should experience, especially if you're a weary traveler after a couple of days backpacking. Your back hurts.
Almost every part of your anatomy hurts.
Exactly. And it's considered the theme park of onsens.
Yes.
And, there he is.
There he is.
Yep, back in. Okay, so the name of the onsen is Oedo Onsen Monogatari.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, in English they just translate it to the onsen theme park.
I've read of some really unusual onsen.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of things. They've the inside of the onsen they've fashioned to look like old time Tokyo when it was still called Edo, and you can have all kinds of different baths. I did hear that from that game show that ABC ran where they went to Tokyo to do it.
I survived a Japanese game show.
They took them over to the onsen, and they added a hot sand bath, which wasn't there back in 2005 when we went. So you can sort of do the whole range of what you can get in an onsen outside of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget that beautiful foot bath.
Yes.
Basically, spikes sticking up of stone, and you step on it a certain way. It's supposed to massage your feet. But it hurt like hell. One of our Japanese friends who joined us was like, jumps out of the pool, walks across the sharp so she doesn't step on the sharp part, and then jump back in. I was like, no, you don't cheat. You have to torture you guys here, you torture you too.
But yeah, definitely, I'll echo your sentiments in that an onsen should be experienced at least once. And after a couple days of grueling travel schedules, it does feel awfully good.
Yes, Donald and I both went not to Odaiba, but to Hakone, which has a leading onsen center of Japan. It's right outside of Tokyo, about 100 kilometers from it. And we went to the Hotel Kowake Ann. We went to the part of the Hotel Kowake Ann, which had the traditional Japanese onsen. We had dinner at the Yunesan, I'm probably mispronouncing it, across the street from it, but didn't go to the baths there. But from what I've read on the internet, they've got some extremely exotic baths there. It's kind of a water park theme with where you're supposed to wear bathing suits, but they have a wine bath, a coffee bath, stuff like that.
And when we went in January, it was cold, and they had black ice on the road, and both Pam, my girlfriend, and I fell, and the hot bath on our wounds was much appreciated.
One word of warning, if you're a tall person like me, a lot of the onsen, at least the one I visited, are made for shorter people, and so it seems a bit shallow. So yeah, you got to be a little bit creative to get yourself immersed, which you'll want to, especially if you visit in January and it's an outside bath.
Especially if you're tall, because we travel with one person that's super tall. 6'5"?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, super tall. And
now,
one thing led to another, so to say.
Now, when you visit an onsen, there's a certain protocol that you must follow. And I believe you guys talked about this in one of your episodes, but maybe you could sort of refresh our memories.
Okay, protocols. Look, like what do you think?
Well, the protocol, of course, is you first get changed into your yukata that they'll provide you with. You then shower and clean yourself before actually going in to enjoy the bath.
You have to make sure you get every trace of soap, et cetera, off of you.
Yes.
Yes.
You have to be absolutely clean of dirt and soap before you enter the onsen itself.
That means even cleaning in those places you don't want to speak about.
Yes, and fortunately, at the onsen we were at, they actually had fairly high pressure shower heads that, the kind that you can pick up and move around, so that helped a lot. But in some of the more traditional ones, all you might find is the traditional bamboo bucket.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's rather interesting to learn to sit on that bucket or one of the buckets as a way to just stay there while you use another one to actually clean yourself.
Mm-hmm. It takes us. There's a certain skill to it.
That is true. That is true. One of the things that I did notice about an onsen. The towels are so small.
So
this is something to keep in mind, that
the towel is like a hand towel almost.
So you got to know how to strategically place it when you're getting in and out of the onsen also.
Indeed. Now, one place that any anime fan, I think, should go is, and I think we'll all agree on that, is the Ghibli Museum. And I think
all
of us have been.
Actually, we couldn't find it.
Actually, we went when they were closed.
Renovations,
unfortunately.
No. But you know, if you're at all a fan of Ghibli or Miyazaki or you know, et cetera, definitely a place that to behold. And we went. Let's see. I think on our tour. We didn't go when the rest of you guys went. We went sort of on our own. But, you know, it's just, I forget how many rooms there are, but it's just a place you'll see, you know, many familiar characters and scenes. And they also have, I believe, was it on the roof? They had like the gift shop and like the little coffee house or something. And they had the big cat bus that all the kids could climb around in and stuff.
It is. If you're a Miyazaki fan, it is just a mecca. And I would recommend that we went there twice, once in 2004, once in 2007. And I recommend going there the way we did in 2007, which is to take the train to the Mitaka train station, which is a very easy trip from Tokyo. I think it's on the Chuo line. And walking the from the train station over to the museum, which is, I think, about a kilometer or two. And if you walk through the streets of Mitaka, you see that it's like walking through a Miyazaki movie. It's that kind of neighborhood, especially since there's a lot of vegetation, a lot of green trees. It looks like you're walking through through Totoro, so the movie. So that's a great way to approach it. And inside, it's just enchanting. There's no strict layout. The English materials there encourage you to get lost in it. And there will be there's some permanent exhibits, there's some changing exhibits, not just Ghibli films, but also movies from other countries that Miyazaki or other Ghibli animators admire. There'll be huge exhibits for them, room size exhibits. There's a robot from Laputa Castle in the Sky on the roof, along with some of the big blocks from there that you get your picture taken with. Other than that, you cannot take any pictures inside the museum. The idea is that you're supposed to take pictures with your mind and remember it, although you can buy a very nice catalog which will have pictures of the interior of the museum. But it is a very enchanting place.
Absolutely. Let's see. City and Glitter, you have here the Tokyo International Anime Fair, and I forget when that is held during the year, but isn't that in October, or am I spazzing on that?
Well, actually, it's on March the 26th to the 27th of this year.
Total spaz.
So if your friend is there during that time, he's an anime fan, he'll love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually listed as 45 out of the 59 things to see in Tokyo.
Aha. Let's see. Have any of you guys been?
No.
Me neither.
Unfortunately, with the group I was traveling with, not too much anime fans.
Nah, that's too bad. But yeah, it definitely. I think he is going to be going during that time period. So yeah, check out the Tokyo International Anime Fair. There's also, if you're a gamer, there's the world famous Tokyo Game Show. I believe that is in October, unless I'm totally mistaken there as well. But if you're at all a gamer geek, the TGS is something to behold. Kawagoe. Am I not pronouncing that right? Or
it sounds right, Kawagoe. Yeah.
Talk to me.
Okay. Well, Kawagoe is kind of a castle city, so there's a lot of old castles and such to see. What's kind of interesting about this place is that it is full of candy. So to say. Okay. They have a street that's dedicated just to sugar. Like sugar sweets. Anything that your mouth wants, you can get it there because it's just all sugary, 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 sugary. I can't explain how much sugar. And it has a lot of the old Japanese feel to it also.
Mm.
Yeah, the folks in Japan nickname it Little Edo because of the way that they've created the main street with a lot of old warehouses. Type buildings.
And convert them into stores.
Wow, yes.
Think about it as a sugar mecca.
Sugar mecca. Yokohama?
I stayed in Yokohama with my wife in 2007. We went to the WorldCom there in August and September of that year. It's a very interesting city. It is a very large city. It's close to Tokyo, an easy train ride away from Tokyo. But it has its own character. It's highly influenced by Japan's trade with Europe. It's built around a harbor. The architecture there, you see a lot of influences of European cities, particularly British architecture there. We spent a lot of our time on the artificial island they have out there, which is the city center where they've got the Cosmo clock Ferris wheel, which is a gigantic neon lit Ferris wheel, which is a lot of fun to ride in. It gives you a great view of the city. It goes very slowly around. In fact, they don't really stop the thing. You just get on the next car as people get off. There's some science fiction looking high rises around that area, including the hotels and the convention center where the WorldCon was held. Looks like something out of Blade Runner. It's got a lot of quaint little shops and restaurants around it. We didn't go to any, but we hear that it's quite a center for jazz clubs in Japan, so that's worth checking out. And the harbor is beautiful to cruise around, especially at night and at sunset. We were lucky enough that the convention had a cruise, a little mini con on a cruise ship available that cruised around the harbor for a dinner cruise, and it's just lovely to stand out on the deck and watch the harbor buildings and the big Toshiba sign go by.
And let's not forget the world's biggest Chinatown.
Yes, it does have the biggest Chinatown in the world. We just went on the outskirts of it, but it's a huge influence on the culture of Yokohama.
Indeed. Okay, winding down the list, I wanted to talk a bit about Ginza, and Ginza is like the Fifth Avenue of Japan. It is the area where you will see tons of you know, famous big fashion brands, Coach, Prada, a lot of big department stores. It's like sort of the big department store spendy capital place of the world. But in particular, it's the site of the first Apple store in Japan. So naturally, being an Apple fanboy, when we went in 2004, that had to be we had to make a stop there. And it's
Apple store is phenomenal.
It's a pretty cool store. Yeah, it's like I think it's five stories, and you know if you ever need help with your iPod or your Mac or something, they actually have, their staff speaks really good English. And I coincidentally had some Mac trouble while I was there, and I was able to get help at the Genius Bar. So, yay.
What's also good about that place is
internet.
You can check your email for free.
Yes. Free. Yes, indeed. Let's see. I think we're down to our sort of minor picks here. Tokyo Tower, kind of a fun place to visit. It's a clone of the Eiffel Tower, and they have two observation decks. They have one kind of mid to high up on the thing, and then they have one, I believe, all the way at the top, and you can get a pretty awesome view of the city from there. It's just a fun place. Nice place to stop in the afternoon, some afternoon or other.
And you also want to go there for the good Janglish that's there, unless they've corrected that since we were there in 2005.
Well, when Kuma went there in 2008,
yeah,
he said it was still there.
Okay. English?
Yes. On the bottom half of the main observatory, there are stairs that take you to the upper half. And in English, it says, stairs 4 go up.
Okay. Ah, yes, the joys of English.
And the nice little thing about Tokyo Tower is the food downstairs.
The food court's pretty good in Tokyo Tower, yeah.
We didn't.
There's one place called Pizza La. Has this weirdest pizza I've ever seen in my life. Okay? Think of a nice big slice of New York style pizza. With a pepperoni stick on top.
Okay.
That's a pepperoni pizza.
Yes, they call that their tandemi slice.
Okay, let's see. What else?
Shoe cream.
Yes. Sorry? After you have your pizza, finish it off with fresh-made shoe cream that you can pick up right next door.
The cream pastry thing?
Yeah, the puff pastry filled with fresh cream.
Good stuff. Something else that people might want to check out, of course, is Tokyo Disneyland. It's kind of interesting to see their take on the American institution we call Disneyland. Any other places in the Tokyo area that come to mind, any of you?
Well, I would say, like, if you're going to do a day trip outside of Tokyo and you want more of Japanese history and culture, then a little trip beyond Yokohama to Kamakura is well worth the trip. You've got one of the main attractions, of course, is the Daibutsu that's there.
That's the giant Buddha statue, correct?
Yes, the giant Buddha statue, one of the two in Japan.
Don't forget about the pigeons.
Yes, and there is one rather impressive temple, and I can't remember the name. Hachimangu is part of the name. I don't remember the whole title. But the pigeons were like almost an infestation, and yet you could buy food to feed them with, which was only worsening the fact.
And plus, they also had an albino pigeon.
Hey.
And this albino pigeon, one of the kids got it, so I snapped a picture of it. I'll have to send those off to you. But also what's interesting about that place is that pigeons were kind of weird that day. All of a sudden, they just flew off of everybody and started dive-bombing us.
Yes.
Attack.
They went straight up and then turned around and went straight down for us. Everybody's dunking like, what the?
Attack of the pigeons?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, well,
about a couple of hours, then they all settle down again.
As long as we're talking places outside of Tokyo, I thought we should just mention a few. Obviously, Kyoto, the ancient capital of Japan. Kyoto, I think, is known for their. They probably do have like over 9,000 temples there. I don't know the exact count, but it's a lot.
Yeah, I think it's actually just over 1,000, but still.
A lot.
In a city of over 1 million people, that's a lot of space being taken up. Kyoto is an impressive place to see, but if you're only going for less than a week, you really don't have the time to do Kyoto any justice.
Yeah, there's just. Well,
Kyoto needs at least two, three.
Yeah,
maybe even a month.
Yeah, Kyoto is like an entire trip in and of itself.
Yeah, and that's where we stationed ourselves all the time.
Sorry, Danny, were you saying?
Yeah, a little bit of background for people who haven't been to Japan. Kyoto is where you'll see a lot of old Japanese architecture because, as the tour guides told us, during World War II, the other Japanese cities were heavily bombed, but anthropologists advised Roosevelt not to bomb Kyoto because it had such a spiritual significance for the Japanese people that if that was done, they would never capitulate in peacetime. So you will see a lot of pre-war architecture in Kyoto, including the old imperial residences, which are always very impressive to go to. Mm-hmm. Also, all the temples are great, some spectacular. To me, the most spectacular one is the Temple of the Golden Pavilion, which is set apart from other buildings in downtown Kyoto by a park around it, a wooded area. It's set in the middle of a reflecting pond, and it really looks more spectacular than the photos you'll see of it. It is covered in gold leaf. It unfortunately is not entirely the original building. The original building was burned down in the 50s, which was the subject of a novel. But yeah, it's spectacular to see in person.
Most definitely, and actually, they do a lot of work on the pavilion itself. The gold leaf is replaced, I believe, once every 5 years to make sure that it's as shiny as possible. A couple of other really big highlights in the city would have to be Kiyomizu-dera, which is up sort of on a little mountaintop, and you get a splendid view of Kyoto as a whole
from there. And great shopping, too.
Oh, yes. The good hike, and it's actually a hike, that you go up from the street level has some of the best souvenir shopping in Japan. In, well, maybe not in Japan, but in Kyoto itself anyway.
Mm.
And don't forget about the ice cream. We've been told that they have the best soft serve ice cream.
Sorry, you mentioned souvenirs. The one thing that reminded me of something I forgot to cover in Tokyo is Asakusa Sensoji Temple. I think it's either the oldest or the most significant temple in Tokyo, or both. But you know, the temple itself is interesting, but just as interesting is the street leading up to the temple, which is lined on both sides with all manner of stalls selling all manner of stuff. And quite a bit of food and stuff as well.
Now, if history serves me right, that area was considered the poorest area of Japan?
No. Prior to World War II, that was actually the old downtown area. It's referred to as Shitamachi or Shitamachi. And it was a little bit of a rundown, poor area, except for Sensoji itself. But it's also rather interesting because they've still got some rather interesting entertainment and clubs and bars in that area as well, if you want to go there at night instead of the more popular places that everybody knows about. You know, but it's really taken a beating since the end of World War II. It's not been able to get back its luster that it had previously.
Mm. And speaking about World War II, there's another that brings up another place that I think everybody should see at least once, and that's Hiroshima and the A-bomb Memorial. When we went, our tour originally did not include that. It was actually my girlfriend Pam convinced them to add that to our tour. And for us, it was really strange because it was definitely the most sobering time during the tour. But it also had a strange kind of hopeful tinge, you know, to it as well. And I believe, City and Gladiator, when you talked about it, you had kind of the same conclusion.
Definitely. That was my reaction when I came out of it the first time I went. It was incredibly sobering to see the vivid recreations in the museum itself. Now, City, I believe you said to me after we left, "I don't like you for bringing me here."
That was Kuma who joined us.
Oh, was it Kuma? Oh,
yeah. Okay. I said that was the most horrific experience of my life. Just looking at all that destruction. That one, I don't know if you saw it. It shows a woman walking out with her baby. The skin is dripping off her bones. And she's holding this baby with its skin almost all gone off. And it's the statue that's there. It's just like horrid. You just kind of going, "Oh my God."
What struck me though was, you know, not, you know, we went there expecting, you know, the citizenry to say, "Oh, you evil American barbarians, you know, you suck," basically. But their attitude was, you know, completely the opposite. It's like I said, you know, like there's that sort of hopeful tinge at the end. You know, everyone's, you know, looking towards the future, you know, towards the elimination of all atomic devices and stuff. So it's a very paradoxical place. You know, on the one hand, you do have all the tremendous sadness and the graphic depictions of the destruction that these weapons of war, you know, bring upon us. But on the other hand, you know, life goes on. You know, it's very odd.
And something that it brings home to you is sometimes watching the shows about World War II or reading stuff about World War II, it seems like something that's far in the past. But being there where the atomic bomb dropped, and we visited Donald and I in 2004, so that was 59 years after the bomb dropped, is that it's all very close. It's all very close in time. There's everybody who is over 60 in Japan is somebody who was alive during World War II. And in particular, there's a cenotaph in Hiroshima, which has the names of everybody who's died because of or in some way connected with the explosion in 1945. And still, every year, they open it up and they add some more names.
Yeah. There are some other reasons to visit Hiroshima as well. For one thing, they have they still run their streetcars, which are really something really amazing. And you can also get okonomiyaki, the Hiroshima variety. Okonomiyaki is, I've heard it described as Japanese pancake or Japanese pizza. I don't think either description is entirely accurate. It's basically certain podcasters that we know of made a rather good video on the subject.
Yes.
Guilty as charged.
It's basically a concoction consisting of flour, egg, cabbage, shredded cabbage, and whatever the heck you want to put in on it as well, like bacon or shrimp or
mochi.
Cheese. Or mochi, otherwise known as crushed and pounded to hell rice.
Yes. Well, I do enjoy calling it by its literal translation, basically grilled things you like.
I like that. But yeah, every region in Japan is known, for their own variety of different cuisines, and I think the two most popular, I believe, okonomiyaki variants are the Hiroshima and the Osaka style.
Yeah, and those are the two that you find throughout the country most frequently. The only other variant that I know of that has attained any popularity is in Tokyo with monjayaki.
But yeah, okonomiyaki comes in all sorts of different ingredients. You could put whatever you want on it. And when you go to an okonomiyaki restaurant, correct me if I'm wrong, you can add different things to it. And a lot of times they give you like a bowl with the stuff in it, and then you actually grill it at your table sometimes.
Yes, that is the best and only way to have okonomiyaki. Have them bring you the bowl. They haven't even mixed it up yet, so you have to mix it up. They turn on the cast iron grill that is the center of your table, and then you just pour it on once it's hot enough and sit there chatting while you keep track of how well it's being cooked. And, it's a really great experience.
And,
yes, but you were lucky enough to have Ryoko make it. One of our friends that took us to this place was Japanese, and she's like, makes it in a perfect circle. I don't know how she does it. But when they get to the last pieces, she started cutting out pieces, like pizza-shaped almost. And she wrote down Gladiator's name in
mail.
In mail, yeah. It just looks so cute, though. Bastard.
Moi moi okonomiyaki.
Possibly. No, but where I was really lucky, though, was when I was living in Japan, basically at the bottom of the mountain that I lived at, was a great little mom-and-pop okonomiyaki shop. And me and my buddies usually went at least once a week. We sat there and we chatted and we made our own okonomiyaki after they gave us the bowls.
And after you returned, they remembered you still.
Yeah, I went back a couple of years after after going, and I took one of my friends to the place. She didn't know it, although she was a student at the same university that I went to on exchange. And the owner came up to me, and she remembered me after like 3 years, and then went on to say that the foreign students don't come down anymore like we did that year. And unfortunately, by 2005, when we went back, it was closed up. It was now a vacuum shop.
It's too bad.
I was so upset because I really wanted that okonomiyaki, because you drove it in my head.
Yes, I did.
And listening to us describe it, flour and egg and et cetera, it may not sound tasty. It is tasty. So definitely give it a try.
Speaking of which, I heard that you were trying it.
Yes, I finally got the stuff for it, and I'm going to try my own okonomiyaki experiment this weekend.
Oh, you haven't tried it yet?
Not yet, no. Tomorrow.
tomorrow.
Let's see, one last place I wanted to mention is Himeji Castle, only because it sticks out in my mind because it was probably the most treacherous climb that I remember, because this is old, you know, beautiful old Japanese castle. I believe it has 8 floors in it. And the thing is, though, the stairs going between the floors are probably the steepest, slipperiest stairs that I've ever seen. And when we went, they didn't let us wear our shoes. We had to wear these slippery little moccasins. And
oh, those things were horrid.
Yeah, I still think that they should have set up a stand at the top of the castle selling T-shirts, selling "I Survived Himeji Castle."
Actually, there were some in 2005.
Oh snap! But yeah, it is actually a gorgeous castle, and there are, and it's actually also a museum. They have all sorts of you know, exhibits there. You know, old Japanese armor and you know, and other interesting things. And once you get up to the top, you get a wonderful view of the surrounding area. Unfortunately, it's currently in a state of they're currently renovating the thing. Although I think, if I'm reading this website correctly, I think they are still keeping it at least partially open during the renovation. So I don't know.
From what I heard, it's once a year they open it up during the renovations, and a lot of it is closed off. You can still walk through the park all year round. You just can't enter the building.
Hmm.
And also, to give you a little bit of fun information about this, tall people are going to have fun at that place. Because
the ceilings,
when you walk down the stairs, you're going to be playing at Himeji Limbo.
Yeah, the ceilings were rather low, now that I think about it.
One of our friends couldn't get down there. He had to play Limbo. So basically, here's a big tall guy walking down the stairs with his back hunched as far as he could to do a limbo down the stairs.
Yeah, and kind of on a side note here, if you are tall and you visit Japan, be prepared to be the object of adoration from pretty much every Japanese schoolgirl in the nation.
You want adoration? We've got a great little story, and if Kuma hears it, he'll probably kill us because we keep teasing him about it. Okay. First night in Kyoto, and we were just walking through the Teramachi area, the little covered shopping area, and this teenage girl working in a shoe shop, getting ready to close up shop as we stopped at a payphone so he could call his buddy to arrange the meeting that we had with him in Tokyo. And this girl, out of the blue, just runs up behind him and puts her arms around him as he is on the phone. And his face goes completely red, nice bright red. I've got a picture of that exact moment, right place, right time. You know, when he finished the call, there was a little pylon or something, cement pylon standing maybe 2 feet,
in height, foot and a half.
Foot and a half, 2 feet, something like that. Anyway, so she stood on that, and she was the same height as Kuma was. Yeah. So we had that picture as well.
Yeah, it was just weird because she comes up to me and she's like, "Eh? Huh?" I'm like, "Hi." And she's like, "Eh?" And I was like, and she said something in Japanese, so like, "Hi, hi." You know, so she could go hug him. She ran up and hugged him. He was just, it was just the most funniest thing you've ever seen.
I don't think.
And we went back and showed her the picture. And she loved it.
Now, I don't think anything that dramatic happened when we went, but when we went, one of our group was extremely tall, and I believe his name was Royce, but I always called him Mr. Tall. But everywhere we went, he would be accosted by these groups of Japanese schoolgirls wanting to take a picture with him. So yeah, if you're tall and going to Japan, be prepared to have a lot of attention lavished on you.
Actually, we got
a whole bunch of schoolgirls go chasing, saying hi to us. We were going through. We were in. Oh, where was it? The one with all the Tories.
Yeah, it was. Sure, one of my favorite places, and I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head.
Back Gladiator.
Yeah. One of the places I keep going back to when I'm in Kyoto. Yeah, Fushimi Inari Taisha is the name of the temple. Yeah, and it was actually kind of funny because the girls just started saying hi, and I was used to it. These guys weren't. So I said to Siri and Kuma, aren't you guys going to say hi back?
All right. Huh? Oh, and we said, oh, hi. And they jumped 40 feet up in the air. So I'm like, okay, I'll capture this. Whip out a camera. All of a sudden, they all see the camera, and they start posing. It's like this camera to Japanese girls is an attraction item. And they did the pose all the time. You can never get a picture of a Japanese girl not paying attention in a candid shot. It's like radar. It's like they have can radar.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the hands go up in the peace sign.
Hmm. Well, I think, let's see, unless there's any other areas that any of you want to mention.
Yeah, I would mention, we mentioned briefly Ikebukuro, which is becoming more known to American anime fans because of the Ra-Ra-Ra series that came out last year, which is set in that city.
That's right.
Or that area of Japan. And one great place in Ikebukuro is the Sunshine 60 building, and which is a business high-rise with an attached mall. The mall itself is pretty spectacular. It's got an amusement park, Namja Town, inside of it. And the Sunshine 60 building is one of the taller buildings in Tokyo. You can go up to almost the top, and there's this beautiful lounge up there where you can have a drink if you're over 21 or whatever the drinking age is in Japan, and look out over the city, especially at night. The view we had was out towards Shinjuku, and we could see the head of the Daieto and the municipal building and all that stuff. And it's a spectacular place to sit and listen to some soft jazz and gaze out upon Tokyo.
I remember that. That was very enjoyable too. Well, there you have it. Again, sorry for the audio problems. I've improved my audio setup since then, so hopefully this won't happen again. And that about does it for this episode of Otakuno Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Remember, as always, if you have anything you'd like to say, maybe you have a comment or a question for us, please contact us. You can email us at feedback@otakunopodcast.com. We have our voice call-in line. You can leave us a message via Skype. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. There are a ton of ways to get in touch with us, and all of those can be found on the Contact Us page on the Otakuno Podcast website. Also, do remember to check out the website for our blog postings in between episodes, as well as other, you know, important announcements and stuff. And check out the various other places you can find us online. Twitter.com/otakunopodcast, Facebook.com/otakunopodcast, Tumblr.com/otakunopodcast, our YouTube channel. We're everywhere, people. So please check us out. Anyways, that's it for today. I'll see you next time.